right. It is Wednesday morning. We're already well into the month of July. Love Jack McClant is with me. We are going through a bunch of things. First hour, we really... we turned it all upside down. So if you missed any of that, you'll need to go back and take a listen, take a look. Otherwise, you'll be missing out. We shot arrows at just about everything we could.
Right from the hip, right here.
I like it.
It's amazing.
Okay. I broke the Hunter Biden news to my Biden-loving mother-in-law this week. It was fun to watch her face of disgust. Says Bitcoin Butch.
Oh, man.
So it's amazing that the Dems in America have immediately jumped to, like, who can we replace Biden with? They're already – it doesn't bother them that their entire government has been a bullshit story for the last 3 years. They're like, let's just find someone who could beat Trump, right?
Yeah, you see –
that's where their priorities lie. Power, not worrying about the country.
Yeah.
Power.
The problem is they're trying to beat Trump instead of win the race. Which is the problem. And correct me if I'm wrong. Did they not... Didn't Trump get arrested as a result of these Democratic people in the States?
Well, I don't know. It's almost like he's been listening to his advisors for the first time ever. And I don't think Trump's a very good listener.
No, he's not.
By any stretch of the imagination. I think he thinks he knows the answer to every question.
Mm-hmm.
But the best thing he can do is just go to sleep and wake up on election day and he'll win.
Yeah.
That's all he has to do.
He doesn't matter who they anymore.
Doesn't matter who they put in, doesn't matter what they do with poor old Joe, they wheel him off to a nursing home. Mm. It doesn't matter.
They might just fish that loon from California. What's his name?
Oh, Gavin Newsom. Yeah, he's terrific. The guy who told everybody to stay indoors and not go to restaurants, and he shut down the beaches and said you can't go out and get fresh air and sunlight. Because it's very important that I go to the French Laundry restaurant with my friends in the middle of the lockdown and do whatever I like.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Mm. Just great. JP says, for people who supposedly care about everything, they have no empathy. I think you're probably referring to the fact that we had to watch this old man suffer during the debate last week, which is very upsetting. I mean, my grandparents, to their enduring credit, did me the favor of dying before they could become a problem. Of course, I missed them.
Yeah.
Would have been nice to have had them around.
Yeah.
But to see that old man up there and to think that his family, and especially that grasping evil wife of his, that they're clinging on to him because he's their meal ticket, and that they're prepared to put him through the suffering in his old age where he clearly doesn't know what the hell's going on. Half the time it looks like he's seen an ice cream truck.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just distracted. And they want him to suffer because he's the mechanism through which they can continue to extort money from whatever nefarious business. I mean, he's got two brothers who've just never done anything except trade on his name. He's got a son who's a crackhead.
Degenerate.
He's got a daughter who's also a disaster zone. That whole family are just revolting. And the fact that they put this old man through this is a disgrace.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone did this in a family of someone that I knew to their grandparents, I'd be horrified. I'd want to report them to, some old people's charity or some state department that looks after this stuff. Mm-hmm. Here, when you hear stories about like people in a nursing home that are being abused, you feel horrible. We don't want to treat our elders like that.
Yeah, that's no way to treat our elders.
And yet, they're putting him out there and forcing him to go through. Can you imagine the anguish in someone's mind when they don't know what's happening? Mm. They're not sure why things are going. Like they took him to Camp David for like, I think it was 7 or 8 days. Could even have been more. He didn't have to do any other work. He just had, this was his prep time.
Yep.
They prepared him and you saw what you saw on Thursday.
Mm.
I mean, it must be just awful. They must have.
It must be.
He must have sat there going, just please leave me alone.
Mm.
Unbelievable.
The poor man. Anyway. Just you know, let sleeping dogs lie.
I get to vote tomorrow, says Jared, for who's going to fuck me over more by making every road in London a toll road. Ultra-low emission zones, the biggest money grab the London mayor has ever thought of. Jared's in London, and I didn't realize that tomorrow's your mayoral vote. So who have you got on there? You've got what's the guy's name? He's been there for a little while now because it's, God, Sadiq Khan. That's it, Sadiq Khan. Thank you very much, Nicholas Bauer. Very well informed. Sadiq Khan is the, I think he's the front runner at this point. So good luck, Jared. I mean, listen, you'd be stupid to have a car in London because they will find any way. And by the way, they're not improving the climate or the environment or the atmosphere with their taxes. They're just taxing you.
Yeah, that's it.
That's all. It's just a way of getting your money into government coffers. That's all. They don't actually want to. Like, imagine if they were planting more trees with that money, or if they were cleaning the subways, or they were, you know, filtering the water in the Thames. I mean, that would be a thing, but they're not. They're not doing any of that stuff. They're just taking the money and using it for programs that nobody asked for.
You know, sometimes I feel like I could go back maybe 2 or 3 centuries when they'd propose a tax of like 2% and then we start a revolution.
Well, that happened. Let's not forget that's how America happened.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We should just go back to those days.
They were going to tax tea. They were going to tax this. And a new nation was born as a result.
See what I mean?
And it was a small tax. It was like a little 2 or 3%.
Yeah.
And ever since then, we've just accepted that this is the way things must be. You know?
The problem is people back then took shit seriously. Like they didn't, you couldn't just. Yeah. I mean, again, I keep going back to this idea of the level of convenience we have in this world has made us so, like, we're pushovers now.
Sorry, just got to say here, Dunks is quite right. Mm-hmm. It's not the mayoral election tomorrow, of course. It is the national election.
Oh, yeah,
Rishi versus Starmer. And it looks like Labour are going to win by a landslide. And you know what? Frankly, I never thought I'd say this, but they deserve to win because the Conservatives have been so absolutely shit.
Yeah.
They just don't stand for anything. Nobody knows what they stand for. They've been weak tea, to go back to our example of the Boston Tea Party just a little earlier on.
Yeah.
And frankly, Rishi Sunak, Boris Johnson, Theresa May, who was the 14-day prime minister?
Yeah, it was.
I mean, there's another one.
Yeah, there was some lady. She was there for like 2 weeks.
God
something
damn
like
it.
That. Yeah.
Say it.
Liz Truss.
Thank you, Nicholas. There we go. Liz Truss. Remember, she was there just for a little while.
Yeah.
She basically went, watched the Queen die, and then was replaced about 10 days later.
They were looking for someone to do a quick cameo, and she put her hands up.
Yeah. It's going to be lots of fun. Mm. I mean, good luck to the UK. You know, frankly, again, I'd rather be here with our problems. I mean that.
True.
I would rather have our problems. It's just time they change that name. You can't call yourself Great Britain anymore. You just can't, guys. You have to go with what Matt Lucas and David Walliams said along the way. Little Britain. You are Little Britain now. You are not Great Britain.
Yeah,
and you're not
so
allowed to
anymore.
Use that title anymore. I'm terribly sorry, but things have changed and you have to move with the times.
Yeah.
You know? You can't call a country what it isn't. And you are no longer Great Britain. So there we go. Sunak effed up the D-Day memorial. I mean, like you had one job. What did he do there? Because I didn't notice anything that he'd done. He has a tiny suit, a very tight suit. Listen, he's you would expect him to at least have a good tailor. He's got tons of money, right? Couldn't do that.
Weirdly enough, the other day he made a, or at least when he announced
the elections.
And his wife
is very rich. The two of them are very, very rich people.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, you were saying?
When he was making the announcement that they were going to go ahead with elections, I don't understand why he couldn't just do the announcement indoors. Like it was raining and he's standing there with his suit. It's like, wait.
Oh, that was so sad. Wasn't that the saddest thing?
I was like, what's going on?
You know, is there a more British thing than to see the Prime Minister uncomfortable in the rain, in a suit, looking sad?
It's like
standing there all morbid and grey. Going, oh, it's time for us to announce an election.
Oh, man.
It's just great.
I was like, so you couldn't go inside and grab an umbrella? Like, do they hate you that much that no one was willing to just stand there?
Shame.
And hold an umbrella so you could announce that you're about to go to
the
polls?
Probably didn't want to look like, you know, that he had a servant. He didn't want to look like there was someone he was paid to hold an umbrella over him because it would make him look like he was
Prime Minister for crying in a bucket, man. Of course, someone has to hold your umbrella.
Jack, everything is performative. Everything is performative. Haven't we seen this enough roll out all over the Western world? There's some interesting things that people are saying here too. I think this is quite cool. Apparently, where are you guys going to address the Israeli influence in the media and not call it a conspiracy theory? Unironic, Sam. Okay, so where in which country is the Israeli influence so profound? Please help me understand that. But like here in this country, find me one publication, except maybe the Jewish Report, that is...
That is pro-Israel.
I would be surprised if you can find one.
Yeah.
But okay, you know, whatever.
You know what, like, whenever Israel and Palestine is brought up, I genuinely reserve my comment because that stuff has been happening for a very long time. And I'm not arrogant enough to assume that I can now show up in 2024 and say, hey, I've got the solution to a century-year-old problem.
Very respectable. Very respectable.
Like
position.
I'm like, look, I don't want Israeli people dying. I don't want Palestinians dying. And if they can't,
you're basically against bad things.
It's that simple.
That's your well thought through. You're against bad things. Great.
Look, don't shoot this one. You don't shoot that one.
Okay.
And if you can't live together,
it's like the president from Mars Attacks, Jack Nicholson, when they're going Mac 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 and shooting everyone, and he goes, why can't we all just
get along?
Right?
That's all I'm saying. Put the guns down. Figure, like, there has to be a simple way of these two groups of people.
It's not going to be simple. I promise you.
You know what I mean?
So producer James has given me an update on our poll for this morning. Where do you get your news? Podcasts, 56%. I mean, obviously, there's a biased sample because you guys are listening to us. So I'm going to have to say that this is about as scientific as... You know, as scientific as the vaccines were.
Yeah, yeah.
So, podcast 56%, from X 21%, legacy outlets 12%, digital media, TikTok and Instagram 9%. So, okay, that's the lineup. But I think a mix of those is probably about the most healthy thing you can do.
Yeah, for sure.
A couple of comments that we want to get to quickly. Mortality is holding strong at 100%. Yes. You know what, Jack? Is that your world peace speech?
Yes, it is.
Wow. Okay.
Put the guns down.
Raven says that's great.
Let's pick up the beers.
You sound like
have a chat.
You sound like a Miss World or a Miss South Africa or something.
Yeah, yeah. And look, people have built careers off of those little speeches. So watch this space. It could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Might just be the next big thing. Who knows?
All right. And Jared says that poll of ours is rubbish because it only allowed you to choose one option. Bad poll. Bad. Bad. See, this is the problem with polls too, is every one of them you can criticize on the basis that the sample's bad or whatever else. Let's get Nick here. I want to talk to him about his book because we live in Joburg.
Yes, sir.
And for many people, that's a reason for despair. So he's written Great Johannesburg, What Happened? How to Save an African Economic Giant. You may remember Nicholas Bauer from TV. He was a reporter on ENCA for a long time. He's been in the news media. He's got a lot of insight, I think, to share with us this morning about how Johannesburg in particular has run. And by the way, he's also had quite a lot to do behind the scenes with how cities work. And we'll find out exactly where that's happened because that's less well known than his journalism career. So we're going to speak to him now, and I'm very pleased to have you in the studio. How are you?
Good morning, Gareth. Thanks very much for the opportunity. I'm very well. Very well. It's good to finally speak to you, man.
Yeah, and good to have you here in studio with us and on an issue that I think we all care about enormously. This is the place we live, right?
Yeah.
And you say here, you know, we've got to save an African economic giant. They always say a world-class African city, but I don't think that's been used for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, it seems a little bit improper to use that at this point in time, to put it as diplomatically as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no sugarcoating it, right? Johannesburg is in a very, very, very bad state. Mm. Politics not going to fix it.
No.
But what will fix it is Joburg's people. I had a lot of fun writing this book, Gareth, and I mean, the overarching point that I'm trying to make is that the gold's done. 40% of the world's gold got you know, in the history of the world, got mined in Johannesburg.
But it's Qedile.
Yeah.
We don't have any more of that now. So it's time to move on.
It's gone. Even though the Zamazamas are trying to scrape out the last last few
they're
bits.
Digging like a honeycomb under this city.
Seriously.
So Nick, just before we get into any of that, though, just tell us what you've been up to since we last saw you on TV, because that's informed a lot of why you decided to write this and what you've discovered in that journey. I mean, you never aren't a journalist if you start off as one, because you're always fact-finding and trying to see what's going on and trying to report on that stuff. But you've had an interesting career change since the TV news that most people would recognize you from.
Yeah, I worked as a journalist from 2008 full-time until sort of 2020, 21, up until the July riots, really. Got very, very, bad experience with those July riots. Anyway, I digress.
But that's an interesting point. And I mean, we're here to talk about you as much as we are your book.
Okay.
So I think it would, it would probably interest a lot of people to know why that was the thing that tuned you out. Because we've been talking this morning about the state of the media and who people believe and who's objective and who you can trust and credibility and all that stuff. So I think it would be interesting to hear your point of view and your story there.
Well, after years and years of reporting the news and walking shoulder to shoulder with politicians as they try to address the country's issues, I got very, very jaded, really.
Despondent.
I reached despondency when the July riots rocked around. I mean, I covered them for a number of outlets.
Did you go to KZN?
No, I wasn't in KZN.
In Gauteng.
I was in Gauteng, CBD. I remember I got stuck in one of the. I mean, what would you call them? Not even protests. One of the anarchic scenes in Alexandra. And we were very lucky to get out. Really, I mean, we were driving through the streets of Alexandra, and we thought, okay. We're in the middle of this now. We can't actually get out. Let's just try and keep our cool. And we luckily got out. We eventually got some footage there. Then we made our way to Soweto. And the thought that I had in my head was, where are we going with this? If I'm to play a positive role here, is it enough to just merely report the news? And it also helped my decision when I got a very bad COVID from reporting on that, right? I can't remember which wave it was or whatever, but... it was the middle of winter. We had a very, very young child. We all got very, very sick. And I thought, it's not worth it anymore.
I mean, did you feel, was that maybe the most dangerous thing that happened to you during your career as a journalist? Because I'm sure you had a couple of brushes that you thought, this is not what I signed up for. And I think a lot of journalists, especially if they go into war zones and things, they know what's coming. But you don't want to put yourself in a position where you can't raise your child because you're dead, because you were covering a story so the rest of us could know what was happening at the Mall of Africa,
Yeah, but you hit the nail on the head there, right? I used to get such a rush, and I used to be the first one, like if there was some shit going down, I was running to where the action was, because that was exciting. It was, in your late 20s, it's like, it's an absolute adrenaline rush. And a couple of things. I remember there was a massive protest in Sasselburg. We almost got fired on by the cops because we came around the corner to the police station that they were trying to burn down, and the cops sort of got into attack formation. And we drove around. It was driving a little jalopy for the Mail and Guardian. And I remember I screamed to the camera and photographer. I said, hang your equipment out of the window so that they know that we're journalists. And they luckily let us in. But I left in 2021 because I thought it was just not worth it anymore. Things change when you become a parent. And I eventually learned later in my 30s that, good journalists are the ones that keep alive. Good journalists need to stay alive to tell the story.
Yeah, who would have thought it?
Simple things like that,
who would have thought it, yeah?
I mean, I think it's worth having, asked that question and having got that answer from you, because also people think it's easy. And that was a very scary moment for the country, not just for you. I'm not surprised that you made that decision. In fact, I applaud you for it. But I think so many of us at that stage, that was probably the lowest we've been. Maybe Marikana was another example of how low. Life Este Meni is another maybe. And then going back to like 94, I can't think of anything as bad as those three things I've just mentioned. And then obviously pre-94, there was a lot. But
yeah.
But that's where you reassess things. Like, I don't want to do this. So what did you do after that?
So I was lucky enough that in 2012, I ended up going and doing a story on Ponte You know, that concrete toilet roll on the skyline.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, man, I got sent there by Nick Dawes, who was the editor of the Mail and Guardian at the time, and he said, you know, sex, drugs, prostitution, gangs, the scared old white lady that hasn't left the 50th floor, get all of that stuff. And, you know, we went into Ponte with a safe word. Rod Stewart, actually, the camera lady at the time, photographer, Madeleine Cronier, I said, listen, if either one of us says Rod Stewart, just leg it back to the car. We went with a burner phone, all sorts of shit like that, right? Because we thought, you know, this is really hell on earth.
Yeah.
So long story short, I didn't leave with that story. I left with a lease to stay. I wrote a completely different story. I lived in Ponte for 7 years and I started a social enterprise called La Langer that essentially, in a nutshell, we do two very simple things. We challenge perceptions of the inner city and we provide opportunities for the youth there. And we do that by taking people of tours of Ponte and of Hillbrow, the surrounds.
Are you Yeovil, still in there now?
Yeah. I'm not directly involved. One of the original benefactors, the a young guy that was there on day one, is now running it as a CEO. And I'm in the background as, I don't know, I suppose a chairperson.
Sure.
But we've taken 20,000 people.
Because people have this idea that Ponte is this nest of hell.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? It isn't. You're saying it's...
Well, no. Look, I can't sugarcoat it either. You know, there's some serious problems in
Hillbrow. I know at New Year they throw shit out of the windows.
Police, the sector commander at the Hillbrow Police Station has cracked down on that. And it's kind of like martial law on New Year's Eve nowadays in Hillbrow. The first one I covered 2011 going into 2012. I was in a Casper and a fridge landed on top of it. Sorry, they call it an Inyala nowadays.
Yeah.
And it was, that was hectic. But
Jesus.
But it's, they really cracked down on it. But Ponte, I love the shitting dog stare that people do give us when we say that we take people on tours of not only that building, but the surrounds. But, I mean, something has to have worked because it's over 20,000 people since 2012 have taken the tour and come to the building and visited La Langer.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
And then luckily, because I started that social enterprise, I sort of leaned back and did a little bit more work for it. And then the opportunity came up to work in the multi-party government of Mpopalatsi in the city of Joburg. I just applied like anybody else.
Okay.
And I ended up working as a spokesperson in the Environmental and Infrastructure Services Department under MMC Michael Sun.
But you didn't, you lasted longer than in Mpopalatsi, right?
Yeah.
No.
We talked about Liz Truss earlier, but she was like the Liz Truss of Johannesburg. She lasted just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I won't go into that many details. I touched on it in the book, but I'm also trying to...
Well, that was all politics.
Yeah, exactly. It is. But I mean, it was a great curtain raiser to what we're going to see now at a national level, because that shit is not easy and it's not going to go smoothly and it's going to be extremely messy. But what I do encourage all of our politicians to just come to grips with the facts that you guys are not doing it alone anymore. Mm. People are watching you. And I mean, in a way, I'm thankful that the MK has kind of got their act together and got John Klopper as the parliamentary leader.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, I mean, he may or may not be an evil man, right? He is going to keep them on their toes.
Yeah, I'm not sure that saying it's a good thing that John Klopper is part of the MK now.
Well,
I'm
not. Let's just put it this
way. It's not strictly good.
Who would you prefer as the parliamentary leader? No. Dudu Zuma or... John Klopper.
Dudu Zuma's too busy with her phone. Well. She's too busy. But
that's like asking, how do you want to die, by gun or by knife? Like the options aren't that great.
The question to ask is, what else could John Klopper do?
Mm.
There are no other jobs that anyone would give him. So
No, true.
Maybe it's a kind of sheltered employment.
Mm.
Anyway, I mean him. Burning and Tlemaza, Tom Moyani. We've got a real rogues gallery going on in the MK party at the moment. All right, so. First comment that came in when you sat down is from Azalea. She says, Joburg is run by foreigners.
Mm.
Now, we know that Hillbrow in particular, Yeovil, is a shadow of what it once was.
Yeah.
And it does seem like the Wild West out there. And for someone who's not a massive fan of government, there's a part of that that's exciting.
Mm.
And there's something about anarchy and it kind of finds its own level and people survive and some thrive.
Mm.
And there's violence and there's weird shit that goes down and there's drug dealing and there's foreigners and there's Nigerians who control things and people from Malawi and Mozambique and Zimbabwe and Zambia and all over the place, there's interesting stuff happening. But You can tell us, having experienced this firsthand and taking people on tours and things there, and I'm sure you wouldn't take people there if you didn't think they would come back.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know, you can only sign so many indemnities. What's really going on? And what would you say to someone like Azalea who says Joburg is run by foreigners?
Joburg is, to a certain extent, run by foreigners, but you also have to come to grips with the fact that Joburg was built on immigration. You can't go back further than fifth or sixth generation Joburger. Everybody's come from somewhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the city's only 120-odd years old, yeah. And it wasn't founded on a river or a port. The only reason it exists is, you mentioned already, gold.
Gold.
Right? And that reason is gone now.
Totally. And I mean, look, it's completely different, the current immigration status quo. As opposed to when Joburg first started, or even the 60s and 70s when, look, my father was one of these imports, right? He was an Austrian guy. And during the height of apartheid, they didn't want to develop black people, so they imported skills, right? And the point that I make in this book is that, okay, yes, there is a massive immigration problem at the moment in places like Hillbrow.
Well, an illegal immigration.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, that's the issue.
Because I don't think
any country in the world wants to chase away people who are adding value and people who follow the rules, or broadly help the society improve.
Yeah.
And I think anyone who would is probably some kind of xenophobe. We've got a big problem with that in this country and in this city, right? Mm-hmm. Xenophobia is a really, really big issue in Johannesburg. I mean, Azalea is not necessarily being xenophobic by asking if Joburg's run by foreigners, but you must have seen with your own eyes quite a lot of not necessarily good behavior.
Horrific behavior, and also just absolute anarchy. But at the same time, what I have seen is ingenuity, innovation, and determination on a level I've never experienced in my life, right? Because the current status quo is, this is the New York of Africa, really.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, people are arriving with absolutely nothing and building empires for themselves.
It's just, you know, like, it's difficult to, again, speak in totalities of Joburg is completely run by foreigners, or foreigners are terrible people. Or, you get what I mean?
Like, you know,
it's such a melting pot. Joburg is genuinely a melting pot.
So Nick and I used to have huge disagreements on social media, and I always thought, oh, he's this left-wing lunatic. And I mean, you may still be, but what I absolutely know we'll agree on is that we love Joburg. I mean, I find, you just said the New York of Africa, I think that's such an apt description, because there's always something going on in Joburg. In the middle of the night, I mean, we talk about, like, during COVID, this place was pumping.
Yeah,
nobody followed any rules, no one believed in any of that stuff. They just carried on because they had to survive. And Joburg is a place of hustlers. And that activity, while it is anarchic so much of the time, people are living. They're surviving. Obviously, there are some incidents. I don't know that the police really know what's going on. I think some neighborhoods have become impossible to raise a child in. And I'm sure that's probably one of the reasons you don't live in Ponte anymore.
Nail on the head,
right?
Gareth.
So, obviously, we're going to agree on a lot of things. We'll disagree on quite a few of them. But Joburg, we're not trying to be pretty like Cape Town. Cape Town's like a supermodel. Doesn't have a lot going on in her head. She's not a serious person. I often say Cape Town makes a great mistress, but not a good wife. Joburg is like a good wife, because there's always shit going down in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You think that's fair?
I think that is such an apt description of Joburg. And I use the phrase Johustleberg, right? Because this is hustle central,
exactly.
Right?
It is.
And you don't go and make yourself in Cape Town. Or I think in any other city in South Africa, you'll struggle to make yourself in the way that you can make yourself in Johannesburg.
Yeah.
And look, in spite of all the anarchy and things like illegal immigration and zamas, I think that there's sweet spots where the opportunity resides. With immigration, I mean, I think that there should be a massive crackdown on people that don't have the correct papers and documentation to be in the country. But
what about the people who are living in buildings that really should be condemned? I mean, we saw that horrible fire that broke out last year.
Yeah.
And people who just illegally occupy things. I mean, I know that you're a lefty, but property rights actually do matter. And you know, the reason that we have more people in the black middle class by percentage and gross numbers that are black than white in the middle class proves that they also have those ambitions to not live in neighborhoods that are just completely disorderly. where you can't have children,
mm-hmm.
where you can't raise those children properly, where you're worried all the time that your kids, something's going to happen to them. Your schools are no good, all of that stuff. It's about values to a large extent, right?
I believe so as well. And I mean, you know, labels are tough for me nowadays. I would regard myself as a lefty, but you know, some people have called me champagne socialist, closet capitalist, whatever.
Have you reformed some of those very utopian ideals that you and I used to argue about all the time?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has a Damascus moment at one point or another in their lives. And look, I mean, I didn't get a chance to finish my point, and I'm sure that maybe some of my lefty supporters listening to this mean, God, crackdown on
him.
Undocumented. Jesus, what's happened to him?
Yeah.
I believe there should be a crackdown on undocumented illegal immigration, right?
Mm-hmm.
But with a path to citizenship and a path to regularizing your stay alongside it.
Because we'd be kidding ourselves if we thought we could put those people on buses and send them away.
No, that's not going to happen.
I mean, wherever we've put illegal immigrants like that Lindela repatriation camp, it's a gross disaster and a blight on this country that we treat people like that, even if they've broken the law and come here illegally. We're not getting rid of them. So let's find a way to legalize them and make them useful to the society.
Yeah.
There we go. Bingo. Because therein lies the greatest opportunity for Johannesburg's turnaround.
Mm.
Embrace all the shit that scares you and all the things that you think are dragging the city down, and find the opportunity to benefit from it. I mean, Zama Zama is another example, right? Mm. Hand those guys artisanal mining licenses and use the money that you get from the artisanal mining licenses to regularize that industry at a very, very grassroots level. And if possible, also use it to repair the environment after 140 years of mining. I mean, I know it sounds a little bit up in the air and lofty ambition, but I think it's possible. It really is. They're not going to go away. They're not.
No.
And I think that's the fear that a lot of people have, because seemingly it's we've kind of left people to their own devices. There's no checks and balances whatsoever. Like, I think top of the list when it comes, for me personally, as far as this the conversation of foreign nationals is concerned, it's how we find you if something goes wrong. Like, if you are a part of the criminal element, I should be able to track you down. You know what I mean? And I think that's the apprehension that a lot of us have. That's why the ideas that you just brought up haven't crossed our minds at all, because, you know, Joe Hasselberg is about staying alive.
Yeah, it's survival.
And keeping the wolves at bay.
So I just want to go to some of these comments, because I made that offhand remark about Cape Town being this beautiful supermodel. But Joburg says Tato is a girl from around the way. Conga Chris says, Joburg is the 6 out of 10 you got pregnant after a one night stand. Kyle just says, Joburg's cuck. I think he probably lives here. Luando says, we forget every province has its own culture. Joburg just happens to be the province where money is the thing that matters.
Yeah.
Marco says, I don't understand why people dislike Cape Town. It's mind-blowing. Cape Town is an incredible place to live in. We're not attacking Cape Town, Marco. Don't do what Cape Townians do and get all defensive.
Mm-hmm.
We're just saying Joburg is different. In fact, I said you're a supermodel. That's a compliment.
It is.
Be happy with what you get here. I love getting off planes and saying, fucking Cape Town, just to see the Cape Townians, right? Joburg is so the sensitive. Kitchen of the house party. The main event is in the lounge, but everyone always ends up having the best time in the kitchen, says Jared.
Yeah.
That's great.
That is great.
All right. So let's get to your book.
Mm.
Because you talk here about how to save an African economic giant. You mentioned the Zama Zamas. Give us some other examples of what we could do to fix this place and to get it working. Because these are the things that hopefully, once we find out who our provincial government are, and Panyaza is allowed to pick the right people, hopefully, and Helen and the DA get to choose their people, and then they can find mayors and all this stuff in the next election. Who do we start zeroing in on first? Is it illegal immigrants? Is it stimulating business? Is it cleaning the city up? Because one thing that really demoralizes me, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, is the way it looks.
It
looks like, we were saying at the beginning of the show this morning, like a trash heap. You can't have human dignity, which we're assured is one of the things we're entitled to according to the Constitution, if you live in a rubbish dump.
You're so right, Gareth. And I mean, I don't think that it's about targeting any one issue in particular.
Okay.
I think what it is about trying to look around yourself and see how you can make an impact in your immediate environment. Because one thing that I did learn about the trash, right? I forget the name of the thing, but they used to have great, huge, big cycle gatherings at different parts of the city. And they did one in Hillbrow once, right? Mm. And I met these cyclists when they came into the Olympic Bar, which isn't really one of the dodgiest parts of Hillbrow, right? Mm-hmm. And I grabbed
it. Yeah, I've been there. I have.
You know.
Okay.
And I grabbed a takeaway, right? And I'm waiting for these cyclists to come in. And they arrive. And I want to chuck away my polystyrene thing, right? And I speak to Vendor, hey, Vendor, do you have a dustbin? And he grabs the polystyrene from me and he chucks it in the corner. And I'm like,
oh, God.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I slowly but surely realize that if you don't take, it's not even just pride. If you don't feel comfortable in your environment enough to exist and be yourself, your Maslow's hierarchy of needs is not being fulfilled. You're like, I don't give a shit how this place looks. Mm. It treats me like absolute crap. So why should I care? So I think that it starts with trying to find a way to make an impact in your immediate environment. And I'll give you one example, right? When I was working in the city of Joburg, copper cable theft is a major issue, right? And that's another thing that's just not going to be able to be addressed by authorities. What is going to help though is people in their own neighborhoods, on their own street, being proactive about issues like that or security issues. And I mean, look, I'm not saying round up a posse, see what weapons you can get and start kicking ass.
That's literally the picture that popped into my head.
And that is what probably, I mean, listen, you're only a couple of weapons short of that on a WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
And there's some angry lady on that WhatsApp group who is more militant than someone who's wearing a uniform.
Yep.
But people, I think, are doing this already. And we can see the signs. I mean, Pumi tells me on a Thursday often about her neighborhood and their WhatsApp group and how they've got people who haven't built on their property for the last 8 years, and then the whole neighborhood like gets onto this WhatsApp group and they come up with a plan and they act on it. And people are taking, because the government isn't and because the city isn't, they are taking more responsibility than they probably would in any developed country where everything was provided and on tap. And I think that's a good sign. There's an interesting point here that Zandi makes. She says in the comments, Joburg is revolting. That's her word. Wow. If it wasn't for money, I would live in the Lowveld or at the Wild Coast.
Mm. Man, so would I. That's an enticing place to live.
So why do people come to Joburg?
Well, you have to make yourself here. I mean, this is the economic epicenter of the country. Even though there is massive growth in places like Cape Town, you know, there's a reverse Great Trek is what I'm calling it, you know, people moving down to Cape Town. There's still a lot of opportunity here. I mean, there's a reason people are here. People choose to go to Johannesburg to make themselves. Mm. Because, I mean, deprivation and opportunity live joined at the hip in Johannesburg. And I think, you know, the future of this place depends on whether or not the people want to take an active interest in keeping that ship going. Because I don't think the ship is quite sinking as of yet, but it is floundering, you know?
There needs to be a culture shift in Joburg.
Yeah. I do think
on a day-to-day basis, like the people's, how we interact with one another and the city needs to change. Because as you said, all of us seemingly are here for our own development, and we want to make our money. And once we've made our money, we'll move to Mpumalanga where it's not so hectic, or the Wild Coast, as that comment suggested. Like, if we start treating Joburg as a place that we love and live in instead of an opportunity to enrich ourselves, perhaps that might change how we move forward.
Dato says, when Joburg is upset, you should try and sit down with her and understand why she's revolting. People are not taking this seriously.
I think that there's a grain of truth in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Understand the challenges that we have, and the moment we begin to accept them, then we can address them, I think.
All right. So I mean, we're not going to solve all of Joburg's problems this morning, and I do encourage people to take a look at the book. I see your News 24 Book of the Month as well. Is that this month or last month?
This month, I do believe.
Nice.
I mean, look, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but I do believe the publisher is owned by the same group.
Oh, well.
So it has helped.
It's got an inside putting you on the chart. That's fine. We don't mind. It's got the sticker on. That's all you need to know. Yeah. What I would say, though, is that in the comments, too, there are a lot of people saying that the people in Joburg are a different kind. And I've been fortunate enough to go to the US. I like to compare South African and American cities only because it's not a direct comparison, but there's a kind of a likeness between Johannesburg. Johannesburg is a bit of New York, bit of LA. It's like, you know, we've got that crazy sprawling, highway riddled, traffic beset LA thing going on. We've also got that spirit that New York has of like, this is the place where you can make it, you could do anything. It's the economic hub of sub-Saharan Africa, all of that stuff. Pretoria is a bit like DC for the obvious reasons. You know, instead of cherry blossoms, we've got jacarandas. And there are good and bad things about that too. It's very cultural, lots of embassies, lots of that stuff. Pretoria is like a more civilized elder relative than Joburg.
Love Pretoria.
Joburg's like wild and parties and you know, takes all the drugs. Cape Town is like San Francisco. It presents itself as being hugely progressive. It's got problems too. There's a lot of gang violence and dirty underbelly. But, you know, with the homeless people in San Francisco, Cape Town has exactly that comparison. But it's pretty and people like going there and, you know, you can sit there and judge other people, which Cape Town does a lot of the time. And then there's like cities no one cares about, like PE, which is like Detroit, really. And we don't need to say any more than that. But I think this is a place that is just burgeoning. If we could get people, as Jack says, to have a culture change, to start taking pride in the fact that they have a piece of Joburg, I think it would be a huge thing. And we've spoken to the Free Market Foundation about this before and to Leon Lowe when he was there and since then, about how people just should have title deeds for the property they're already in possession of. Like some families have owned a plot in Alexandra, small as it may be, for three generations, and they don't have anything to prove that it's theirs. It beggars belief that, you know, you've got people talking about the land, all these politicians screaming about the land, but there are ways we can actually do this. If there's a government in Johannesburg in the next while and they do anything, this should be a priority of theirs. Don't you agree?
I do. And I think there's many things that Herman Mashaba got wrong when he was Johannesburg mayor, but he did hand out title deeds.
Yeah.
And again, this is where the closet capitalist in me comes out because, you know, once you have a title.
I do think, sorry, Nick, I think it's kind of important that people also exchange value for that. I think you don't just give someone, save them 50 Rand or 500 Rand or whatever, just so that, like, you've paid for it so it's worth something. Because that way, when you receive that thing, it's valuable.
Yeah.
And you can now borrow against it. And you can open up a little spaza shop or a little stall, or you can sell stuff on the street because it's your street.
I was saying the same thing about the taxi industry. I don't understand, till this day, I don't understand why those guys don't have a standardized salary every month, and we can, we'll know that they'll be on a set schedule, meaning when you get to the corner of Catherine and whatever, you know that the taxi will be there at 6:30 because they're all nationalized and you know what I mean? These people can actually go open up bank accounts and maybe even get loans to start side hustles and all of this stuff. But all of these seemingly obvious things were just overlooked.
Yeah, there's a viper's nest if ever there was. Taxi industry, trying to formalize that is going to be nuts. But Gareth, I think you make an extremely important point in terms of value. Once we begin to value the things that we have and that we are experiencing Joburg, even though they are, combined with the degradation that we're seeing on a day-to-day basis, I think we can begin to make a change. That point that I was making about the infrastructure theft, these sort of civil protection groups that formed in various regions of Joburg, those areas, the suburbs where they were operating, you could see the percentage of vandalism and theft of infrastructure was markedly low, like between a quarter and a third. And I think that, you know, once again, it starts with trying to find out what's going on in your part of Joburg. You're not going to be able to save the entire of Joburg by yourself, but as one person, you can make an impact in your own way.
And I think we have to give credit where it's due to the banks who've kept the CBD alive, because they all have head offices there. And they've done a tremendous job of, by and large, trying to stem the tide of destruction and desolation that's been happening in parts of Joburg. There are parts that I'm sure you won't even go into. I'm sure there are parts that even the most hardcore gangster wouldn't go into. Mm. But I think they deserve some credit. I think those guys who've done so much of the inner city renewal, those guys who've helped try and fix Braamfontein and other parts of the near CBD and have built out of ruins, really, places where people want to live and established these little zones where you can have artists and you can have entertainment, you can have food and drink. And that's helped enormously. And the other thing is, and Mapelo brings this up in the comments, he says, homeless people here in Musgrave, that's in Durban, have occupied every unoccupied building, including beautiful restaurants and bars. They don't just sleep and shit everywhere. They break down these places. I think what's happened too is that Durban has become worse than Joburg because it's been run into the absolute ground. And since the riots, nothing's got better. Floods, tornadoes, God knows what else. Like Durban's become the ugly poster child for this is now your worst case scenario, not Joburg anymore. So we're like a little bit relieved. It's not us. Hey, don't look here. There's worse shit in Durban. Do you think that's true?
Yeah. I mean, look, I haven't visited Durban. Well, I visited last year and I also took a look around and I'm like, whoa, yes, that has really fallen off a cliff. And I don't see a quick turnaround there by any stretch of the imagination. Credit needs to be given to the corporates that are staying in the CBD. And I want to talk about Nando's. Eh? Nando's, yeah. I don't think, is celebrated enough.
In Rosettenville.
Yeah, I started in Rosettenville in the 80s. Now 1,200 stores around the world.
Yeah.
Where's their HQ? The HQ is in Lawrenceville.
Central Kitchen.
Exactly. And I mean, it's also
part of I've been there for meetings too. I mean, everything around it is a slimy sewage dump, but but that itself is lovely.
Yeah,
totally. I mean, next door is this place called Victoria Yards, and they are trying, right? They are trying. They haven't exactly drawn the amount of people in that maybe Mabuneng did back in the day when it first started.
Yeah,
but they're trying, and you know, their co-founder Robbie Brosen is part of an initiative called Josie My Josie.
Absolutely.
Something that hasn't been reported on is, you know, we heard the good part of the story about Anglo-American giving away their old offices to an entrepreneurial sort of grassroots education initiative. They wanted to leave that thing and leave it empty.
Really?
And people like Robbie Brosen went to them and said, don't you dare. Like, what message are you sending based on your history? You've taken all the gold. You've made yourselves fabulously rich.
Right.
And now when shit's hitting the fan in Joburg, you tuck tail and run to Rosebank and leave this cavity.
Robbie Brosen is an absolute champion and I have nothing but good things to say about him. He's been a friend for a long time and I think he's a friend to Joburg.
Oh,
more
yeah.
importantly than that.
Oh, yeah.
His work at Constitution Hill too has been tremendous. And I just love that we have people. You know, everybody thinks, oh, I can't make a difference. I'm just one person. But there Robbie is proving that he can actually move mountains.
Totally.
And,
totally.
And by the way, when we talk about moving mountains, something you refer to in your book too, is like the mine dumps have all gone because people are now trying to get that last little bit of gold out. And that's a good thing because that was poison and filth. Mm-hmm. And I mean, people were living with, you know, if you drank the water that came off a mine dump, you would be dead in years.
Yeah.
A very short space of time.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. I mean, those mine dumps, various studies have been done. I think it was a Northwest University one that found traces of uranium and all sorts of radioactive material. Yeah, I mean, once again, you know, it depends on how you look at that mine dump. Oh, an absolute eyesore, disgusting, whoa, Joburg is shit. Well, no, there's corporates, there's mining companies that are using new technology to reclaim the gold. Opportunity. Is there a way that I can maybe try and plug into that industry? Is there a way that I can try and find opportunity in this eyesore that's, I mean, mine dump's not going to fix itself.
No, but you struggle now to see them. I mean, especially around like Soccer City, there used to be a lot more.
Yeah,
remember when they built it? Okay, then a good point that's being raised here by Raven and a whole lot of others is the drugs. Because Joburg, especially in those parts that we discussed already, Hillbrow, Yeovil, those kinds of areas, I mean, there's a lot of massive trouble there. We've got Nyaupe all over the place to Flucker. People are talking about that. It's not good, right?
No. And, you know, a lot of the hijacked buildings, it's absolute hell on earth in those ones.
Yeah.
You know, and the people that stay there are enabled to do that through the drugs. I mean, I would be hooked on heroin, Nyaupe, you name it, in order to be able to survive in those things, right? And I mean, I think that that's really I don't know. If we don't sort the drug problem out in Johannesburg and South Africa at large, or at least try and make a concerted effort to do so, it is going to engulf society. I mean, times are already tough, you know, and two things that always go up when times are tough are bottle stores and gambling halls, right? And drug dens. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to my old hood, Discovery. My grandmother also in Florida. And I went around there recently.
Was that your old hood?
Yeah, Discovery in Florida.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right?
We all have problems.
West Rand is actually...
The West Rand.
I like to call it the Best Rand, not the West Rand.
Okay.
But Soti from the West Rand. I went through those areas and I'm like, Jesus, Florida is just a meth lab now.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, there's people living at the station. It's all overgrown. And I went and I did a story when I was working for Newsroom Africa. And I mean, like...
If you ever want to see, like... racial harmony. Just see how many white and black drug addicts are hanging out with each other.
It's a great equalizer.
It's an ugly thing, but like people always think everything is stratified on race in this country. It really isn't.
It really isn't.
No. And a great example of that is that when you're down and out and you're on tick or whatever else, they all sit together.
Mm. Nothing screams racial harmony than a white and a black drug
shooting up together.
Yeah, I mean, Bluetoothing.
Bluetoothing.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. Scary stuff.
There's
man.
This informal settlement in Florida called, they call it Jerusalem, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, I was there 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Next to
you guys
to
got all the nice places. I'm so jealous. You got all the places I really want to go.
That should be the poster child for non-racialism because you'll find every race in there.
Yeah.
Not in a good way, guys. Let's just move.
It's an example.
We joke, going from drugs, we joke about the Nyaupe mayor. I mean, this guy from Al Jamaa or whatever, who's our mayor. I don't even know. What's his name?
Yeah, I don't know.
Guamanda. Do you know anything about this guy? Does he even know anything about himself?
You know, context of Al Jamaa, all right? It's run by a guy called Hanif Hendricks, who by and large I think is a decent guy. He's our deputy minister of social development. It's important to this story that we're talking about now because he allows anybody to join his party in order to make a political impact, all right? So he's not like a purist in terms of you will swear allegiance to
Islam or whatever.
We don't want to implement Sharia law because not all of our members are
so they're not pro
Muslims.
Well, that's the least you could ask of someone if they don't want to implement Sharia law. That's nice.
Yeah.
But where did he find this Guamanda guy?
Well, that's the point that I'm trying to make is like I don't actually know where this guy comes from, and I'm not too sure about his principles, his own personal policies about not only economics, but also like socially speaking.
They pulled him out of like one of those Zama Zama tunnels.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know about that, but I think it's an absolute
our mayor.
Joke.
How did he become our mayor?
Political horse trading.
Yes, sis.
But it's a shame that the guy's mayor, he has more bodyguards than his party has seats in the council. And it is a bit of a joke. I mean, like those two instances that I'm immediately thinking about, the explosion. Never mind the fire, right?
What was that?
He rocked up and then you're like, if this is the guy in charge, we are actually like...
A lot of shit.
You know, do not put faith in those people, those elected people. Try and make a difference in your own little corner now because there's the proof that that is not going to be the solution.
What happened? Is that street repaired yet or is it still
a
fuck up?
No.
No.
Oh, man.
It's not. Same with that building, you know? I mean... That's not a Joburg thing, though. I mean, like, the National Assembly.
No.
Why the hell on earth did the Parliament building take
Parliament.
18 months to even just clear?
It's very bad.
Stupid.
It's because clearly these homeless drug addicts are running the place. That's what I'm thinking. I mean, it wasn't the guy who he apparently the one they tried to blame one guy for all of that.
It made the moment I saw that story, I was like, yeah, this is Cap. They're lying.
The mirror opposite of Robbie Brosen, but proving the same point is you can make Joburg better like Robbie does, or you could burn down Parliament like that homeless dude did. Yeah. You do make a difference.
Yeah.
Right? If we've come to anything after this this circuitous route, it is that we know that you make a difference, yes. No matter who you are. Yeah. I think it's great that you've written this book. I'm sorry to rush things to a close, but I see we're almost at 8 o'clock. I think people should read it, especially if you live in Joburg and you care about the place. And I know we only scratched the surface here. Eskom, we could have talked about. Water, which I know is an issue at the moment. There are people currently sitting without water today. You got to fuss bait. That's like a South African thing, right? Just fuss bait.
Fuss bait and realize that if the change is going to happen, it unfortunately starts with you. And I mean, being an active citizen, we just voted. Sorry to break it to you. That's the very beginning.
Yep.
You know, who's your member of parliament? I mean, do you even know the people listening, right?
Please.
Find out.
Ugh, please. And the other people that you can't rely on are these NGOs. No, seriously. I mean, there's so many NGOs that are involved in things that do absolutely no good.
A lot of these hijacked buildings are run by NGOs.
Well, look,
at least they're documented to have been.
Well, they're the vehicle. Bad people are using to do what they want to do. And mostly it's just chasing power, and there's a corruption element to it. And there's possibly they're involved in a lot of the criminal stuff too.
This is where our opinions diverge.
I knew there would be a moment. Did you have to, you had to wait until eight?
Right?
Look, in a nutshell, Lerner & Jay is not an NGO, but we operate like an NGO. And I believe we have a more positive impact than a negative one. There are NGOs that you kind of wonder, well, you're in it for that Section 18A certificate. You want that little tax break.
No.
By and large, I think NGOs are doing more of a good job than a bad job. Not to say that they have not been, if not hijacked, but taken advantage of by nefarious forces at times, right? I think there's a lot of inner city organizations that are trying to fight for the rights of the people that can't fight for themselves. Not to say that they're not open to be misdirected, you know, Garrett.
Sure.
But I don't think that they're all a bunch of loony tune criminals.
Well, I hope you're right. we will have to end it there. I'm thrilled that you came to spend time with us this morning, and thank you for writing the book. It's called Great Johannesburg: What Happened? How to Save an African Economic Giant. And Nicholas Bauer, our guest this morning. Thanks for coming in. Thanks Jack. Garrett.
Thank you, Jack.
Sheesh. Anytime.
Busy
Anytime.
Day, hey?
It
Great
is.
Start
busy,
to our Wednesday.
Very, very, very busy. I love it.
All right. So now time for some naope. Cheers. We're on our way. Let's go.